is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcome back. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Immediately to the news from Iran. The demonstrations started by the protest against the murder of a young woman by the bully boys in the streets of Tehran. Since September 17th have shown no sign of flagging all throughout Iran, all those cities. The question is, what does this mean for the fate of the regime now involved in attacks in the neighborhood, threats to the whole world with its suspect nuclear weapons program, and now reportedly selling drones and other war-making materials to Russia while it continues this invasion in Iran? Malcolm, welcome back. What is it in general understood in Israel about these protests against Iran? We've seen protests before. Is this different in your measure? Good evening, Malcolm.
Good evening. It's great to be back with you, Mr. You and all of our listeners. This is different than the past. This is not the same as we saw 5 years ago and 10 years ago, demonstrations there. This is far more widespread, far more sophisticated, and the response of the troops to it is very different as well, where the army and IRGC, Basij, others are refusing to participate in actions against the people. And the demonstrators have been very clever in regard to the Basij. They've been taking their pictures, identifying them on the internet, and going to their parents' homes and saying, "We will hold you to account for what happens and what your children do." So the kids then, the sons and daughters, come back. And so they send them from town to town. They're moving people around. But the rioters, as they call them, or the demonstrators, as we call them, see that this is very different. They have much more sympathy for them. They supposedly as much as 60% of the critical organizations in the country identify with the demonstrators, and the disobedience level amongst the rank and order of the different security agencies is well more than 20%, in some cases up to 40% and higher. And this is only the part of insubordination. We're talking about many other things that are taking place where the government is not able to implement and therefore not able to mobilize sufficiently. There are demonstrations taking place in an evening in 1,000 or 2,000 places when they only have 50,000 troops that are willing to go out and respond to it. And because they destroyed the CCTV cameras and other things, they're not able to anticipate where they're going to be. So they're rushing small groups around trying to respond to the different demonstrations. So they keep popping up in other places. And it started with women, but as you know, it's men, it's storekeepers, it's the bazaars, it's the truck drivers, it's the elementary schools and high schools. It's spreading to every sector. And also you have the ethnic participation now in the demonstrations, and there's been more action against the Kurds in Kurdistan, and we saw some shootings in Azeri provinces and some arrests and claiming that they were spies for Israel. That's always the cover for justifying the arrests that they are making. So the government has not been able to get a handle on this. They're not crushing it. It's growing every day. The people have seen through satellite TV and social media what life is like. They close the internet, but they bypass it. They're getting, as you know, from a Musk system, receivers so that they can establish a connection with one another. The rioters were setting traps for the armed forces, the surprise effect, and many forces have been involved in the incidents. The arrests now are over 70,000, yet it still has not made a dent. With everyone arrested, when every young person, and supposedly there are thousands of teenagers and others who have been arrested, their parents join, and they take the weapons away from the soldiers, more than 700, the last count that I heard, but it's a much higher number. And they've also carried out acts of sabotage against the Air Force and motorized forces. So we saw that a fire in the ammunition depot at the RG Air Force Base. Only a few examples, and there's so much more it would take the whole show to describe how different this this time it is. And they are trying to respond by changing the tactics. but it's not, they're not nimble in doing so. And so they have not been able to use the, they're using tracking apps and other things to try to identify who are the leadership, but the leadership are being moved around. They're being protected by the people they set in place, Klozman, but they are not responsible for beating or shooting. Many of them are not armed because they don't want to provoke the crowd even more. So they're trying to learn lessons from the past, but it is not effective in either diminishing the intensity of feeling or the broad nature of this these demonstrations. We bringing hope. In Hamas and Hezbollah has been a bad move on their part, too, to augment their forces.
We go immediately to Israel. Only Malcolm Hohnlein can do Israeli politics in less than 2 minutes. This is the fifth national election in less than 4 years. Malcolm, I learned from Reuters that Bibi Bus has been rolling through Likud strongholds. Likud is expected to have the largest bloc after the election. What are the major issues right now, Malcolm?
Major issues like here is, of course, the economy and security. There's been an uptick in violence in the Palestinian areas. We see this new organization, the Lion's Den, which is actually against the PA security forces also, but they are escalating the violence. And one of their key leaders was found this week in Nablus 2 days ago and killed. So we can expect a further escalation. We know that they've been involved in many shootings and violence against Israelis in Jerusalem and elsewhere. So the security issue is always up front. The economic issue is up front. Right now, it looks like a 60-60 tie, the 120-seat Knesset. You have to get a majority, 61, to be able to form or have the appearance of being able to do so to form the government. Right now, it looks like a deadlock. And that could always lead to another election. It could lead to parties changing. It's very hard to know which ones will cross the 3.5% threshold. Some of the parties look like they're in danger. The Arab vote will be very critical, but they weren't able to come up with a unified bloc. And so this election will be somewhat different. I think Likud, the center right, is more likely to have majority, but it's very close. And will be whoever wins, it will be by a very narrow majority, most likely.
Lebanon. There is said to be a momentous signing between Israel and Lebanon about the prosperity off the coast of both. Is this good news, Malcolm, or are there caveats here?
There are many caveats, and there are experts and people who have appeared on our show many times who are very skeptical of the deal, feeling that that Hezbollah can claim a victory. Others who say that is not the case, that this in fact weakens Hezbollah, it strengthens the government. As you know, the president, Aoun, is finished, his term is finished, but they cannot elect a replacement. So they're going to try and sign in the next, I would say, 24 or 48 hours, because Aoun's term ends, and because the longer this stretches out, the likelihood that it could collapse. The deal is that they agree on a map that actually is much closer to the Lebanese demand. It will enable Israel to start drilling in the Karish, where they already have the rigs in place. Lebanon will be able to drill in areas that are expected to have resources, though it could take a long time till they're actually drawing it out. And then the maps are then deposited. Both countries sign an agreement with the U.S., then deposits it with the United Nations. As an agreement, neither parliament seems to be voting on it. So America has pressed Israel to meet the demands and make the concessions. According to a lot of observers and others, feel that this was the last chance. This will enable Israel also to benefit from its field. It raises many questions, and I think only time will tell. But most of the security agencies and others support it. That gives people more confidence that it will not move to Israel's detriment. The feeling is that, though, any financial income with Hezbollah's dominance in Lebanon will benefit them.
Back to the deprivations of Iran, the predator state of Iran. Malcolm, the president of Ukraine, says that Russia has ordered 2,000 drones from Iran. We know that there has been sighting after sighting of the Shahid 136, a slow-moving, low-flying, propeller-driven suicide drone from Iran. However, The debate is whether Iran is acknowledging this, and at the same time, is Iran now considered an enemy combatant? What is Israel doing about the Iranian threat? How is it helping Ukraine?
Okay, so this is several questions that are very important because they've been distorted and misrepresented. The fact is that Iran has sold 2,400 drones to Russia and other equipment. There's talk of them selling also surface-to-surface missiles, which is a statement about what Russia's own capacity is. These are the Shahid 136, as you said, is very slow flying and therefore subject to Ukrainian regular forces being able to shoot them down. And so Russia has been shooting, firing 10 at a time in the hope that one or two will go through. They're relatively low speed and making it fairly simple target. But they are deadly and they are significant. And as been noted, they go after the infrastructure. Especially the electronic grids. Their action by Iran could well be a violation both of the sanctions regime, the United Nations Security Council ban, the transfer of drones, but also about the potential of being branded war criminals for providing these equipment. The Russians try to say it was their equipment originally, but they don't, I think, today promulgate that fiction anymore. There's broad support for sanctions. We see the EU and others. The JCPOA has come to a halt, although I want to caution that we should not think it's dead, that right now it's impossible to negotiate with the Iranians while they're doing what they are. But this is the true Iran, and we're seeing it. And the idea that we would have given them by this point $100 billion or whatever really would have been more outrageous. We are not doing enough in terms of the oil sanctions. According to a lot of observers, the U.S. included, being lax in the enforcement of the sanctions to stop Iranian oil exports, which still brings them a lot of money. And the economic minister reported a 580% increase in income on sale from oil and gas between March and July of this year alone compared with last year. So the Iranians are getting more and more involved. We know their troops have been seen in Belarus and in Crimea. They were trained. Supposedly 10 Iranians were killed in an attack. They were training Russian soldiers to use the drones. There's denial on the part of some officials about it, but I think that it's pretty clear. And the EU has imposed some new sanctions in this regard against Iran as well. And the Israel, in the meantime, is providing a lot to Ukraine. You know, there's been criticism because they don't sell the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome is not appropriate for the Ukrainian situation. They have been providing them, including most recently with detection systems, early warning systems, so that they can, when there are attacks, that they will be able to respond more effectively. They have provided a field hospital. They provided hundreds of millions of dollars in defensive equipment. They do not sell offensive equipment. You know, Russia is on Israel's border in Syria. The situation in Syria remains very tense. There were explosions again this week after a month of quiet. Russia simply turning over the S-300s, S-400s to the Syrians would mean that Israel's freedom of action against the Iranian supplies to Hezbollah and to building up their militias in Syria would be greatly damaged. So people talk very blithely when, in fact, the record of Israel in this regard is very different, and they're giving intelligence on the Iranian drones to the Ukrainian military to on how to counter them. And Israel has voted to condemn Russia at the UN on every vote. Half the countries of the world have not. And yet Israel, again, comes under this unfair criticism and attack.
Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, just returned from traveling. We turn now to our colleague, Indiana Hohnlein, who's also back from traveling. I'm John Batchelor.